Dr. Sam Wan serves as the Associate Director of Ministry Formation and as adjunct faculty with the Old Testament Department. Sam has served as a pastor, a worship leader, a missionary in Russia, and has experience serving in both the Asian immigrant church and multicultural church contexts. Sam has also worked as a community and hospital pharmacist with recent experience in oncology pharmacy. His academic interests include biblical intertextuality in the Old Testament, a theology of the biblical covenants, and a biblical understanding of race, culture, and human flourishing. His personal interests include guitar, sci-fi and pop culture, basketball, working on cars, following local sports teams, and being an avid Michigan Wolverine fan. And actually, I don't think the half has been told. Sam offices next door to me, and I can tell you, that's just scratching the surface. Sam is a second-generation Dallas Seminary alumnus who first came to campus when his father earned his THM degree in 1984. And Dr. Hasek Wan is here with us this morning. And if you would just wave and let us recognize you. Sam earned his THM and doctorate in biblical studies from Dallas Seminary after completing his PharmD at the University of Michigan. As a second-generation Korean-American who has also served in Russia, he enjoys speaking Korean and Russian conversationally. He and his wife, Hannah, who is also here, and I'll let you applaud for her in just a moment, but the two of them have three children and enjoy life in the Dallas area. Hannah, if you would wave, if you would please, and we'll recognize you. And two of their three children are here. Rachel is in medical school in Atlanta, so she's not able to be here, but Caleb is 20 and will be a junior at UTD, and Christopher is 14 and will be going to high school this year. And if you guys would just wave your hand and let us recognize you as well. And while you're clapping, just help me welcome Dr. Sam Wan to our chapel pulpit today.
I'll get to this in a moment, but I was thinking about this, and you got to give me a minute here because this is very surreal for me. Yes, it has been over 20 years since I was in your seats as a THM student, but in my mind's theater, it feels like it was yesterday. And so for me to have sat there and seen people like Dr. Coover Cox and our faculty up here and heard them speak over those years, it feels really weird to be here. So give me a sec to just kind of compose myself. And I'm going to be talking today in the Old Testament, which would make sense. But I want to come to you today, and I thought, what would be good to speak on today? And I think that the prevailing theme for my time with you today, as brief as it is going to be encouragement and a reminder of who God is and how he sees you. And here's what I've learned in my short time as someone who's new to the DTS scene, as someone who now teaches and works here. People ask me, what's the hardest thing? And you'll be surprised, the hardest thing for me has been learning to grade, because I hate doing it. Not because of the work. What I hate is having to tell a student that the work you have shared with us and the work that you have put in is not an A-plus assignment. I wish I could just give everyone 100. And not to be able to do that has been hard. It's been an adjustment for me. And here's why. It's because it actually, I think, in some ways, cuts against the very fundamental way in which God sees us. So the Old Testament is great. I'm going to kind of give these little reminders out because I want people to study and join us for our Hebrew classes and things like that. There's a reason. You cannot fully appreciate the beauty of who Jesus is and what he has done if you do not really appreciate what has come before and what has set the stage, and also the grand story in which it's all taking place. And so let's go back to the very beginning so we can get a glimpse today of how it was meant to be and in terms of narrative trajectory, where it's all heading. And that will help us, I hope, recalibrate how we see ourselves today in God's eyes. So I want to take you to Genesis chapter 2. And I'm going to be reading just a few passages from Genesis chapter 2 because this is at the very beginning of the story. It helps us set the stage for what was meant to be before the fall. And so instead of seeing ourselves in light of the fall, it's really good to be able to be reminded of how we should have seen ourselves in light of what was meant to be. So in Genesis chapter 2, verse 8, I'm going to read from the NET Bible, but any translation you have will be fine if you'd like to follow along. Starting in verse 8, "The Lord God planted an orchard in the east in Eden, and there he placed the man he had formed. The Lord God made all kinds of trees grow from the soil, every tree that was pleasing to look at and good for food. Now, the tree of life and the tree of the knowledge of good and evil were in the middle of the orchard. Now, a river flows from Eden to water this orchard, and from there it divides into four head streams." Now, I'm going to skip ahead to verse 15. "The Lord God took the man and placed him in the orchard in Eden to care for it and to maintain it. Then the Lord God commanded the man, 'You may freely eat fruit from every tree of the orchard, but you must not eat from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, for when you eat from it, you will surely die.'" So, the way most of us have probably been trained to read this story is to see it as a story about restriction, about laws, about rules, about boundaries. And what we often miss is the invitation. And one of the reasons we do this is because we may not be reading it in Hebrew. So I'm going to plug Hebrew. There is a construction here in verse 16 where it says, "You may freely eat fruit from every tree." In the Hebrew, there is a very specific syntactical construction here. It's a combination of an infinitive and an imperfect. So literally, you could read it something like this: "Eating, you may eat." But really what that means is, a great way, Alan Ross suggests this type of reading: "You may eat to your heart's content." Eat everything. And here's what you often miss. We are so fixated on that one tree, we miss that the entire garden, this orchard, is available to us. And it was meant to be a generous invitation. Now, you're going to say, "Well, yeah, but what about the but?" Well, it's there. But see, this is what I would consider an invitation with a loving boundary, not a legalistic restriction. This was never meant to be about rules or about permission. This was meant to be, come in and look. And earlier in the text, what you have is repeated affirmations that this garden, this place was good and very good. So let's take a look at what he was meant to do. In verse 15, it says, "He took the man, placed him in the orchard in Eden to care for it and maintain it." This meant he was coming into a very good place. He was not coming into a desolate place and being asked to toil and labor. Actually, it was meant to be a place of safety where man would intimately commune with God, to collaborate, to care, to cultivate, and to be creative. That's what it was meant to be. Now, I want to take a moment to just look at what the serpent does with God's good invitation. Because how the adversary twists your words to make them toxic tells you a lot about what the adversary does not want you to take away. And so when the serpent comes in chapter 3, verse 1, it says that he's more shrewd than any of the wild animals. And so the emphasis of the narrator is on pay attention to what the serpent says, because he is incredibly sharp and clever. And he is going to do everything he can to turn this beautiful invitation into something horrible. And he does just that. He said to the woman, "Is it really true that God said you must not eat from any tree of the orchard?" And here's the thing. He acts like he's quoting God. But in the Hebrew text, he intentionally leaves out that particular grammatical construction. He changes the entire tenor of the invitation and turns it into a restriction. And so Eve has no choice but to go on the defensive. The serpent's rhetorical strategy is devastating. And so now she says, "Wait, no, we just can't eat from that one tree." And then she adds, "We must not even touch it." Well, God never said that, but this is what happens when you turn permission and invitation into rules and regulations. You then start to add your own rules and regulations. This is what I sense just needs to be heard today. While you're at seminary, there is a temptation to start to think that you are the sum total of your production. Your grades represent who you are. They're a commentary on the type of person you might be in ministry. And that's just not true. You are loved by God. So let me kind of close by sharing with you what I think the better vision of the garden is today. It's God's kitchen. So if you were to come to our house, and if you are a treasured friend or family member, we don't put you in the living room. We tell you to come on into the kitchen. And if you're coming over for a good meal, chances are we'll be in there already working on this wonderful meal to share with all of you. And what we may ask you to do is, "Hey, do you mind cutting up some of these onions? Or hey, do you mind grabbing this out of the fridge and getting that ready? Hey, do you mind?" And you know what? None of you would ever say, "Man, Sam and Hannah are terrible hosts. They're making us work." No, you would realize, "Oh, we have a great relationship because they're not afraid to let us into this kitchen where it's messy and see us as we truly are and join with us in preparing what is good." And then we get to this wonderful meal. You see, the garden was never meant to be a place of toil and forced labor. It was never meant to be a place where you were measured and you were restricted and you were confined. It was meant to be a place of great freedom and safety and care and cultivation and creativity. And we're headed there. In Revelation 22, I just want to read how the story ends. It says, "Flowing down the middle of the city's main street is this river. And on each side of the river is the tree of life, producing 12 kinds of fruit, yielding its fruit every month of the year. And its leaves are for the healing of the nations." In fact, if you actually go look closely at the Greek, it's very likely that what we're talking about here is an entire orchard of trees of life. And so you went from one tree in the garden, and through this wonderful arc of salvation history, God's taking us to a place where it will be a city, and there will be no need for gates, and there will be no need for light, because the sun in all his glory will dwell with us. And there are going to be trees of life among this river, And they are going to produce the kind of fruit that will finally heal all the millennia of suffering and hurt and devastation that we have witnessed and continue to witness. So this is my encouragement to you. Instead of worrying about the work, the grades, about measuring up, instead of comparing yourself to others, accept the beautiful invitation to be in the kitchen of God, sharing in His good work, which is to start to continue to take us down that path to that city. We're not that there yet, but we are going to be part of helping us get to there. So you were wondering what this was, huh? This is called doenjang. It's a Korean food product, and it's made from fermented soybeans. So let me just warn you, I am not going to open this because you would not appreciate the smell. It's very pungent. It's acrid. Basically, it's what happens when something spoils, because that is, fermentation is just a fancy word for went bad. But you're wondering, why is it in a jar and why do they sell it? It's because this is also a key ingredient in some of the most delicious food you will eat on a Korean family table. And there's one slide I'd like to show if you can. This is called doenjang jjigae. This is a soybean paste stew. It comes from this, and it's delicious. So here's why I'm sharing this with you. If you come into our kitchen and you look at this jar, I am going to tell you, don't touch it. Don't open it. And it's for your own good. And if you knew what this smelled like, you would thank me. But a few hours later, when we're eating that, you will be so glad this was there. You see, the boundaries that God places for us are for our good and for our flourishing. And when we turn them into legalistic restrictions, and when we use them to bind people's hearts and consciences, that which God meant for good does become toxic. So I just leave you with this. God is an inviting God, and He wants you to be co-laborers, collaborators in a place of great safety and intimacy where He loves you and you are free to be creative, to cultivate, and to care. Appreciate it.